so excited. Give it to me.
Hello, I'm Tom Merritt.
And I am Molly Wood. Welcome to It's a Thing.
It's now, in fact, a thing. And we're not even actually sure exactly what the thing is, but the idea is that Molly and I are going to identify something in the world that we're like, that, you know what, that's a thing.
Yeah.
And each one of us are going to bring one up and talk about it each episode.
That's like kind of like a thing right now.
It's a thing. It is a thing.
You all are listening to this and you know exactly what we mean when we say it's a thing. In fact, and I'm excited about this because really this show is just a chance to revive the languishing Twitter feed that I own and control, twitter.com/itsathing.
Right. So if you notice a thing, at reply, it's a thing, and then maybe your thing will become our thing.
Yeah, we could. We could be like, it's your thing.
Then we'll license the Isley Brothers. That'll never happen.
We make a lot of money on this show. So if you go and you look at the ugly It's a Thing Twitter feed, you'll see that it was literally just, sometimes it didn't even have links. It was just be, you know, food with an egg on top. That was a thing in April 2009, which is totally true, by the way. It really was.
And also predated by Loco Moco in Hawaii.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Roots of the things will come to play.
That could be a segment, in fact, the roots of the things.
Uh-huh.
Five-toed running socks I pinpointed in 2009 also. Basically the little, you know, whatever they're called, those shoes. The Vibrams. Parkour became a thing. Things like that.
Prediction: French braids will soon make a comeback.
And become a thing. I did. That was a rare. I branched down into a prediction there, and that didn't really
future
happen.
Future things.
See. God. Anyway, so as you can see, we are inventing the show, literally at this moment, but we believe there's something to it. That this could be a thing.
Are here at the creation.
Yep.
You're witnessing the birth. maybe instead of making people think of witnessing birth, we should get into the first thing.
Definitely. All right, you go first. What's
all
your
right
thing?
My first thing comes from a dinner I was having recently with a friend of mine, actually a friend of a friend of mine. We were meeting Ron Richards in LA, and one of the people there is a school teacher, and we were talking about how, you know, the phrase YOLO, right?
Mm-hmm.
You only live once. And people use it. It's a meme, right? So that's not the thing, though. What this teacher was telling us was that in her high school, they misuse YOLO. YOLO is supposed to be like, well, I'm going to jump out of a plane. Well, YOLO, right? You only live once, might as well do it. They've taken to using it to replace F it.
Really?
Essentially, yeah.
Like it's the new FML?
So, yeah, it's like, oh, my car broke down. YOLO.
And oh, how embarrassing. Or like they kind of mean that's life.
Yeah, exactly.
Or
what are you gonna do?
C'est la vie.
Yeah. And she hears it obviously when they are supposed to be handing in an assignment or something, right?
Uh-huh.
And they're like, did you get the assignment done? No. YOLO.
That's so embarrassing. No,
and
really?
She's like, no, that YOLO does not apply to you didn't finish your homework.
Right. Like, stop using it at all. Because I think it was recently pinpointed as like the most annoying meme of 2012 or something like that. It's totally obnoxious. And then B, if you're going to use it, don't use it in place of what? In place of I'm sorry. It's like aloha.
Yeah. YOLO. What are you going to do? Well, and I was like, really? So kids actually do use that? Because I was a little suspicious that
me too, the whole
actual
thing.
High schoolers were even in on it. I'm like, this is probably just some old person's meme.
Because we know about it.
Exactly. I'm like, look, I'm 42. If I know about it, kids can't possibly really be using it, right?
Oh my God, you're 42?
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
I don't know.
I haven't seen you in years.
Years, calendars kept rolling by.
Curse that time. Well, you know, YOLO.
Yeah, exactly. I have another birthday. YOLO.
Okay, what I really want to know is, did you see the Lonely Planet YOLO parody?
No, I didn't. What was
Can
that?
Can I play it? Should I play a little bit of it?
Sure.
It is amazing. So the Lonely Island is Andy Samberg and those guys.
Oh, you said you're Lonely Island. Okay.
Lonely Island. What did I say? Lonely Planet.
I don't know if you, I thought Lonely Planet.
Right. Not the travel people. The Lonely Island, which is Andy Samberg, that Jorma Taccone. And an SNL writer, and they did this amazing parody of it with Adam Levine, but you'll see why it's absolutely hysterical. Because YOLO, I think, has really become a massively hated meme.
Oh, really quickly, right? Didn't take too... It wasn't too long after I first became aware of it that people were already like, I'm tired of this.
Yeah.
YOLO, you only live once. The battle cry of a generation. This life is a precious gift. So don't get too crazy. It's not worth the risk.
You know that we are still young. So don't. Chill pill, ease off the throttle.
Never go to loud clubs, cause it's bad for your ears. Your friends will all be sorry when they can't hear.
They start off with things like, don't go to loud clubs, it's bad for your ears. And they end up with them basically like living in a bubble, you know? You only live once, people.
Right, it's more of
don't
a warning.
Where you're, is hilarious.
Stay out of trouble, don't take risks, never leave your house. Cause YOLO.
That's serious business. I mean, I guess if we're going to just migrate it to whatever we want it to be. It's so, I don't want the next generation to be so stupid, but man.
I'm out of milk. YOLO.
YOLO. I guess it's okay if they're stupid because YOLO.
Right. No, that's it right there. Like, oh, I don't want the next generation to you know, end up unintelligent, but YOLO.
But YOLO. YOLO as the new FML. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my thing for this week is foodie backlash.
Uh-huh.
Now, and this is a really like growing kind of angry trend. And I mean, I think Anthony Bourdain probably started it a little bit when he started calling out Alice Waters for being the slightly pretentious jerk that she can be a tiny bit, or having maybe slightly unrealistic expectations about what people can cook and eat.
She's the organic foods, vegetarian specifically, right? Alice Waters.
Alice Waters is basically the person who reintroduced vegetables to the world.
Okay.
She has that really famous restaurant in Berkeley that I haven't had enough coffee to remember the name of.
Chez Panisse.
And Chez Panisse is, I mean, I am one of them. I moved to California from the middle of the country and had grown up basically not even really eating vegetables. Like they were, we ate, you know, kind of slimy, yucky things that came from cans or were frozen. Or, you know, your mom's idea of a vegetable would be like corn that's
right
out of a can and then heat it up, put a little butter on.
Yeah, that was delicious. I used to eat that all the time.
Still love that. But I went to Alice Waters' restaurant and had vegetables and was like, oh, this is a whole different food. So it kind of kicked off fusion cuisine and the idea of really using fresh greens and getting them from your own garden and all this stuff. But I saw the 60 Minutes thing with her where, you know, I mean, she went out and she picked some fresh greens from her garden and then she came inside and she chopped them all up and she put them over a fresh tomato from her garden. And then she poached an egg in a copper spoon in her kitchen fireplace and put it over the egg with the fresh greens.
Wow. Copper spoon?
Yeah. Like a 3-foot long copper spoon that she then held over a fire in her kitchen fireplace. And Leslie Stahl was interviewing her, and Leslie Stahl was like, seriously, lady?
Like, just you know, use a pan.
Yeah, like, I microwave a Pop-Tart. Like, America. But so now, there is this kind of backlash against food snobbery, and I even saw an article, a headline that said that the thing that's getting lost in fancy restaurants now, because chefs are so into molecular gastronomy and experimenting with all these weird things like turning all the lights off, and the thing that's getting lost is like the customer who sort of just wants to sit there and have dinner.
Oh, because the atmosphere is like you're irrelevant. You're here for the show. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, it really is. And it's so there's a double backlash happening. On the one hand, it's people saying that the expectations around always eating organic or, you know, having a 3-foot copper spoon in a kitchen fireplace are unrealistic, and that that's a form of classism because you can only eat that way if you can afford it. And I think there's some debatable elements to that. But the other backlash seems to be like, hey, chefs, stop making your restaurant so damn complicated. Like, I just want to eat food.
You know, that's interesting because I just went to a place called the Trapelle in Playa del Rey, and we were not shocked, but we were unprepared for the fact that not only do they not take reservations, they don't even have separate tables.
What?
It was just come in, find a seat, sit down, we'll bring you tasty food. There was no, like, it's almost the opposite of what you're talking about.
And I think that seems to be, yeah, and food trucks, I think, are, I mean, the reaction to this does seem to be restaurants that are getting easier.
Yeah.
And more down home. You know, we have a mac and cheese restaurant in Oakland that's
great. Right.
Or you're seeing more sort of cafeteria style or like, I really think food trucks are kind of the ultimate backlash against this. Like, we're just making cool food out of a truck.
Yeah, focus on the food, not on the show.
Right.
Yeah, there's a place called Lemonade, too, which is cafeteria style. And it's all about vegetables, right? It's that same Alice Waters gestalt that you're talking about.
Yeah.
But it's like they're just in big metal tubs and they dish them out on a plate.
Right. Which, you know, that's okay. They're still vegetables. I mean, I'm not, I do think there should be veggies, but I just started reading. So this came, I noticed this sort of bubbling up and then I've been reading this book and it called An Economist Gets Lunch. And it's sort of like advice for everyday foodies. And this guy is like, cheap food is not bad food. And local food is not necessarily better for the environment.
Definitely.
And there are these things that the food snobs are insisting on that he flat out said is killing entrepreneurship and innovation. And the food world needs to know, this is a direct quote, the food world needs to know that you don't have to spend more to eat healthy, green, exciting meals.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
I mean, I've found tons of restaurants. I'm in full-on restaurant explore mode, so I apologize if I get a little annoying with my, I went to this place and I went to that place, but I just moved.
You're in the epicenter of both the annoying foodie thing and probably the quick rising of the backlash.
Exactly. And we went to a restaurant last night that is a cafe during the day, like full, you know, like you just walk in, sit down, order a coffee and maybe a nice lunch sandwich. But at night, it turns into a French restaurant. Totally affordable, amazing food, totally unpretentious.
Right. I got to say, this book is fascinating for that because that's basically what it's all about, is finding those places that aren't pretentious. And it's got all this sort of really counterintuitive advice. Like, if you want good Chinese food, most of the Chinese food in America is not very good, but you should go find it in the suburbs and in strip malls.
That's where the good ones end up.
Because rents are cheap.
Uh-huh.
It's more likely that what you're going to find is an immigrant family who's all cooking really, really authentic food in a restaurant where they can afford the real estate.
That's interesting. And I what you said about him saying that local food isn't always better is, I think that's important too, because it's just common, right? We go to these extremes, like local food is good. We must only eat local food at all times. It's like, well, no, I don't dispute that local food is good and probably better in a lot of cases, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's more expensive. Sometimes it's lower quality.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes then, you know, ruin plots of land trying to overgrow local food when we could just bring it into a place that has a lot of cheap land and needs the labor.
Right. Tomatoes are a good example. Heirloom tomatoes, locally grown, much tastier, right? But if you don't want heirloom tomatoes, you just want regular tomatoes, actually having them shipped in is cheaper because it's grown on land where it makes sense, you know, in economic conditions that make sense. Yeah. It's all a matter of what you want.
You know, this is that thing where you try to argue for moderation in a world that just loves to overcorrect.
Yes.
Oh, wait, we want context and, you know, nuance in our thinking. That's never going to happen. But I do really, I am fascinated with this, like, kind of, I think if I was going to pinpoint the name of the thing, it would be almost that, like, foodies are ruining restaurants. And that restaurants are now trying to fix it.
Yeah, it's kind of a common cycle, I think. We're in that end of the cycle, huh?
I think we really are, where everything has just gotten way too fussy. Like, I don't need to have a 3-foot tower of spun sugar when I could have ice cream.
I think I avoid those places, though. And I'll be honest, I've never eaten at Chez Panisse. I've never eaten at the French Laundry. I always end up I go to gastropubs a lot.
Right.
Because simple, good beer, great food. That's gastropubs and food trucks are the coming defense of your ability to eat reasonably priced food in comfortable surroundings.
Against the 3-foot sponge sugar tower.
Exactly. Take the tower.
And I do, I am a foodie, so I do sometimes eat those places. Chez Panisse, I would say, you should still go to Chez Panisse. It is not fussy. Like, it's fresh, and it can be a little snobby as a dining experience, but the food is amazing. But, you know, like, I was in Denmark about a year and a half ago, and I really, 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 I was in Copenhagen. I really wanted to go to Noma, which is the current best restaurant in the world. And I obviously couldn't get a reservation. I went to this one called Geist, which they call like mini Noma. And sure enough, they were doing all this really kind of clever things with food. Like, they served a ravioli that was not made out of noodles. The actual ravioli were made out of cheese.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And this, I mean, it was phenomenal. But it was funny because the friend that I went with said, you know, this restaurant's great and it's easy to eat here because they're doing clever things, but it's not a big pain in the butt. And she's like, I've been to Noma, but it's kind of annoying, like, because it's so experimental. That you're kind of sitting there going like,
I'm not sure.
I want to know. But all of that said, I am in less than a week. I'm going to the follow-up restaurant by the couple that did El Bulli, which was previously the best restaurant in the world before Noma. And then they just kind of got tired of doing it and they closed it.
Oh, wow.
It's in Spain. Yeah. But so they've opened now restaurants next door to each other. And the one that I'm going to is called 41 Degrees. And it is 41 courses, 57, and
what?
Okay, but listen, it's 41 courses, and each course is like one bite.
Oh.
And then it comprises separate tastes, they say, taste experiences, because okay. I think bites might have like a little cocktail or something.
Sure.
It's like the epitome of that, right? Like 41 totally customized, fussy little bites. It's probably... like 4 hours, you know, we're going to need a walk break in the middle.
Endless amuse-bouche, essentially.
Yes, exactly. It's just like hours and hours of amuse-bouche.
Weird. I can't tell if I think that's awesome or horrible. Right? Because I love the little bites. When they bring you the amuse-bouche and it's like a little shot glass of tasty gravy or, you know, just a one bite, like little burger thingy. Those are awesome. I love those. 41 just seems like a freak of a lot.
A little daunting. 41 sounds like, for sure.
I thought you were going to say 41 degrees, they cooked everything at 41 degrees.
I could see that happening too. Well, it was a really funny story actually, because my friend Sarah, who was trying to book it, you know Sarah, she's trying to book it and she's online and she's like, well, the whole site's in Catalan, but I think my Catalan is good enough because she lived there for a year
ago,
right? So let me just start that by saying her Catalan was not good enough.
Oh.
She goes, as I understand it, I think that you pay, it's 50 euros per person, and you get 50 bites of food, and the restaurant's called 41 Degrees. And I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So then she gets the reservation. She calls me. She goes, I have good news and bad news. I managed to get us a reservation, and this is a big deal. I mean, Ferran Adrià's second restaurant, like, oh. I managed to get the reservation, but I was kind of wrong about some of my translations with the Catalan. it is 41 courses, not 50. And I'm like, well, that makes a lot of sense. And she goes, but also it's a 50 euro deposit.
Ah, do I even want to know?
It's, well, I mean, it's like French Laundry pricing, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
It's
appropriate for the people who did the best restaurant in the world that you would, you know, and if there's anything I'm going to spend money on, it's going to be food. I was like, that's fine, but it's. This is exactly the kind of restaurant, and I'm exactly the kind of person.
Well, and when you spend that much money, you want an experience, right? Whether that experience is just amazing food or something else, like 41 amuse-bouches in a row. You know, it's a story you can tell.
Kind of. I think so, too. Because I ate at the French Laundry, and I found the experience disappointing. Because they've got it, you know, it's so rote for them at this point. It's almost like eating at the best tourist trap you're ever going to go to.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't find it to be a joyful experience. And then a few months later, I ate at a restaurant in Napa Valley that I found to be just as good and way more fun.
See, that's where I am most of the time. It's not that I avoid things like French Laundry and Chez Panisse. They're a lot of work to get reservations at, and I just end up not giving up, but just not bothering.
Yeah.
And finding other hidden things. And I'm that other person, right? I'm the person who's like, I'm going to find the Koji food truck in LA and eat the kimchi tacos and, you know, be like Bourdain. Ha ha ha. It's a whole different kind of pretentiousness.
That's actually the funny part. The food backlash will inevitably turn into its own kind of pretentiousness. Exactly. But I'm not going to sit here and say that either one of us is eating any better than the other, because I think
no,
you know, some of those food truck experiences are absolutely on par with some of the dishes you will find at the French Laundry.
And at the same time, 41 degrees is going to be an experience that you cannot replicate in any other way.
I know. I can't wait to tell. I will report back.
All right. Excellent. I can't wait.
And then, of course, we want to hear your stories about your foodie experiences, whether you are, whether you aren't, whether you use YOLO improperly.
€50 deposit, YOLO.
YOLO.
Actually, that makes sense. Never mind. I take it back.
That's exactly right. That's a perfect use of YOLO. She was like, actually, it's more like four times that. And then I go, well, YOLO. Except right. that I would never say that.
At reply, it's a thing. Was one way to get a hold of us. Perhaps we'll even create an email address.
At some point, we probably will. I don't know what it'll be.
There's plenty of ways to get a hold of us in our other ventures.
How to find us. Tweet us, at reply, it's a thing.
Maybe we'll do it like food trucks. We'll be like, there's not a single email address. You just have to find us.
Yeah.
Because that's always encourages good feedback.
I love it. Outstanding. But yes, in the meantime, right now, I think maybe just tweet us.
Yeah.
Just tweet, you know, these things, it's not like they need a lot of explanation.
No, they shouldn't, in fact. They should be concise.
They're just a thing.
They're just a thing. It's just a thing. Okay?
It's just a thing, you guys. YOLO.
See you next time.
Bye. Give it to me. I don't need no man speaking lies. Got politicians.